Hey there, podcast enthusiasts. Are you tapping into the potential of podcasting to boost your brand? Here's something remarkable. 67% of the U.S. population tunes into podcasts. That's not just listeners. It's a community. And let me tell you, the emotional bond between listeners and their favorite podcasts is stronger than ever. Don't just take our word for it. Visit catsdigital.com to explore success stories from advertisers who trust podcasting to deliver results. Discover more at katzdigital.com.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 350? Is it 350? No, 340. No, 331. 331. I'm Braden.
No, we're past 331 for sure.
I know. I'm all out of sorts this week. Yeah. I'm Braden.
I'm Andrew, and the IQ of this show has drastically fucking plummeted.
Oh yeah, this is listen, the two smart guys took off this week. Dan's obviously been in Thailand ever since. D-O-N-A-L-D-T-R-U-M-P.
T-R-U-M-P.
He's taken off to Thailand.
He's swearing celibacy.
Yeah, Dan right? shaved his head and he said he's not sleeping with any men. He's not sleeping with any men. No, none of you men have a chance with Dan. And then Zell just forgot he had a trip to Mexico. Must be nice to be that rich that you can just forget you're going to Mexico. No big deal. I forgot. I'm going to Mexico. Case File tonight, we are talking Did He Do It? Or as what I like to also call, also known as Braden and Andrew's Freak Off.
Fuck yeah, buddy. Talking P. Diddley. P. Diddley.
Absolutely wild. Like breaking news. Heard it first on the show. Guy who refers to himself as bad boy for life is in fact bad boy.
A shitty person.
No good. No bueno.
Surprising he didn't talk about could have incorporated micro penis in his name at all. Cause that's come up a few times.
Yeah. I was like, some real cuck energy from Diddy.
Yeah. It all tracks. Yeah. Right? It all tracks now. Like, it makes sense. He's like pretty much like you watch Get Him to the Greek and it's like, oh, he's not acting.
Yeah, no, that's him.
That's
him. Why he had a one off role because that was him in the movie. Yeah. They're like, play good you. Too. And he's like, no problem.
Yeah. I was impressed. I was like, listen, he's a pretty good actor, but no, not just was himself.
Well, and I mean, before all this Diddy stuff started coming up, what we knew Diddy for is like rap mogul, huge in the music scene.
Clothing has his own clothing line, had alcohol lines. Yeah, like
guys,
mind mogul. You, listen, I knew something was wrong right from the jump.
Well,
my spider senses were tingling because as a kid, I don't know why, but I also took the East Coast, West Coast fucking drama to heart. As a kid, I refused to listen to anything East Coast. East Coast stuff I started listening to was like DMX. And that was it. I was West Coast for life.
Yeah, I hear you. I
just had nothing to do with it.
Well, it's hometown. You and me are hometown guys. We cheer for the team that's closest to the hometown. And we're West Coast boys.
It's true.
Right? So like it or not, Snoop Dogg, we're also on your team. We're white allies. In the rap battle. the other thing I knew about Diddy is, which kind of ties in and which he was infamous for before all this came out, lavish fucking parties. Right?
Oh, buddy.
Like there, I mean,
freak off.
Jamie Foxx, I remember seeing an interview with Jamie Foxx talking about like how much money Diddy would spend throwing these like elaborate white parties. It was like the place to go in the rich like Hollywood and like music industry circles. It was like you wanted to get the invite to like a Diddy party because they were insane.
It's crazy.
Right?
One of the things that I've had to laugh so hard about this too, because I genuinely as a kid wondered, I'm sitting there and I'm like, all of a sudden Mace, East Coast rapper. So of course, I wasn't fucking with him, but it's good. Good music, super popular, height of the game. Guy was awesome. And then all of a sudden, quits rapping and comes a fucking priest or a preacher or something. He just all quits, joins church. And I'm like, none of this makes any, I'm like, why would anybody do that? Guy's got all the women, money, cars. And I'm like, I don't understand. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, he's got some regrets.
He's got some skeletons.
Yeah, man. So let's kind of get it. So what I kind of wanted to do is I wanted to get into like the history of Sean Combs, aka Puff Daddy, aka P. Diddy. And then he's got a new name too, I think. Something with love. I can't remember. Anyways, I wanted to get into like the roots to see where we can like where the making of a monster kind of came from. Because on all accounts, this guy is a massive fucking monster.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you know this, but Sean Combs' dad, Melvin Combs, was like an infamous fucking Harlem gangster, like rolling with Frank Lucas from American Gangster type shit.
No, I had no idea.
Which is pretty fucking, yeah, it's pretty wild. So his dad was literally like a full-blown fucking gangster. He was a big coke dealer. And in the mid-70s, I guess he was sitting in his car and there was a hit and he was shot to death. So Diddy's mom, who was a preschool teacher or a kindergarten teacher, decided, they're like, okay, that's it. We're getting the fuck out of here. Took whatever little money they had, moved them into a suburb not too far away. And Sean ended up going into some private schools, getting a decent education, and he just all of a sudden started thriving all the way up until college, where he went to Howard University. And like you were saying, you know, Diddy threw these infamous fucking white parties. Well, this kind of stuff started when he was in university. This is where he kind of got, like, he was almost, the vibe you get is a bit of a, like the gangster Van Wilder, right? Like everybody wanted to be friends with him. Everybody wanted to go to his parties. And like these big parties, they attracted important people. And somebody that he went to school with originally from where he was from was a rapper by the name of Heavy D.
Heavy D up in the limousine. Is his
real name. Fucking rights, man.
I know him.
yeah. So we became really good friends with Heavy D. He actually approached him because Heavy D's quite a bit older than him. Approached him one day when he was 17 and was like, listen, I want to be your manager. And obviously you'd imagine Heavy D would kind of laugh that off because he was already a rapper with a label. You know, they end up becoming friends. Combs hangs around for a while and then they hit it off, coming to these big parties when he's in university. And Heavy D's the one that introduces him to the head of Uptown Records by the name of Andre Harrell. Andre and Sean fucking hit it off right away. And it's kind of suspicious how well they hit it off because by the age of 20, you know, he starts as an intern, which is pretty normal. But by the age of 20, he's the president of Uptown Records.
Yeah, he really took like 20 years old. He like went under his wing and then instantly they were like thick as thieves, these guys.
But also when you think about it too, like the music industry is one of the hardest industries in the world to fucking crack. Yeah. Right? Like, and all of a sudden you're 20 years old and you're a vice president of a major label.
Yeah, I know.
Like, yeah, you're outgoing and ambitious and stuff, but it's like,
yeah. That's like, listen, weird. Zell's 36. He's only the head of a couple monkeys. That's it. Right? That's how
exactly,
hard it is.
Right? Yeah. It's super hard. So, you know, you look at that kind of meteoric rise, right? And you're like, that's kind of weird. So you start digging and you look into, Andre Harrell's past, and it's pretty much the fucking same thing. He was discovered in college by Clive Davis, who was the founder of Arista Records. Clive took him under his wing, and by 1985, he funded him to create Uptown Records, right? And then one of the major things here with Clive, and this is gonna, like, with Clive Davis, not attacking him for his sexuality or anything like this, but at this time, he was one of the only openly gay record producers.
Yeah.
Right? And this is in the fucking 80s. So it's...
Hey, not that there's anything wrong with it.
Right? No, not at all. It's just... one of the main theories is that Clive Davis was kind of like Harvey Weinstein-esque when it came to talent, with young male talent especially, right? So he would...
He was gay Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah. It was like, you scratch my dick, I scratch your dick. Was that how that works in this situation?
Funny thing about my back.
Yeah, it's located on my dick. But yeah, so it sounds like he might have created this weird power dynamic by you know, we're going to probably going to hit back to this pretty soon, but like by taking advantage of these young, you know, talented people, establishing dominance on them and then kind of manipulating them, giving them what they want. But now you're mine. Now you do what I say. Right. So at the time, you know, Diddy started working under Harrell in the same nature. And they think that Harrell established that same power dynamic with Diddy. And in fact, one of his old managers walked in on Sean Combs doing some favors for Harrell.
What kind of favors?
Scratching some back? Yeah, scratching some back.
Power scratching?
yeah, like, apparently he was like fucking.
What do you mean?
Slobbing on the knob. So she walked in and saw that. So we've now established Sean Combs, P. Diddy, Puff Daddy. He's now running, you know, Uptown Records as the president. Harrell's the CEO. He starts signing like massive names like Craig Mack, fucking Biggie.
Theory going to dive into that the hip hop scene is run by deeply closeted gay men?
That's the hip hop agenda, pal. So he's signing all these major names and he gets ready to, you know, produce Biggie's first album, Ready to Die, which by all accounts, as an adult man now that I've put aside the East Coast, West Coast drama, amazing.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Amazing. Right? He goes to produce this and the higher ups at Uptown, well, not even Uptown, sorry, the higher ups that own, label that own Uptown, right? The guys that, you know, the big wigs are like, you can't fucking put this up. This is ridiculous. We can't support it. I don't know if this is around the same time. Was this when like Nancy Reagan did her big anti-rap thing? Or this is probably just before that. I think that was like early 90s. No, it's probably around because NWA was the first one with the Reagan fucking parent advisory. We should look that up. You know what I'm talking about, right?
It must have been.
Yeah. But anyway, so right away the record label was like, no, we can't. We can't put this out. Sean Combs, Puff Daddy. The reason why he got Puff Daddy, his mom called him Puffy because he was so fucking angry all the time as a little kid. Was furious. Put up a giant fight, caused a fucking scene to the point where Harrell had to let him go. Right? So you think about it, you're like, oh, fuck, man. Like this kid kind of rose, type of rags to riches type situation, right? You're like, okay, I get it. Like it's, you know, you had your run and you're done. Well, all of a sudden, Clive Davis swoops in. Apparently him and Sean have been making kind of like this relationship outside that Harrell didn't really know about. And Davis decides to fully fund fucking his Diddy's record label, Bad Boy. And that's how Bad Boy gets created.
Yeah, it's so fucking...
And it's like makes you wonder. So you know that you've got like... it's like he kind of completely goes around Andre Harrell, who was supposed to be the dominant person in that personality, the guy that, you know, scouted him, gave him everything, completely goes around and talks to his fucking daddy. Right? Like, it's crazy.
I mean, it is crazy how you see this guy just come up seemingly out of nowhere, and now he's in charge of, you know, what's soon to be the most powerful, like, record labels on earth. Like in very short order.
Like totally. And it's like, and he's doing it with, you know, obviously Biggie played a huge role in that, right? Like that's Craig Mack, fucking banger too. Mary J. Blige. I think he also helped, like he got Jodeci going, which is cool. 112. Fuck, I can't remember. But anyways, one of the most interesting things too, while I was looking into this, you know, like Biggie, Notorious B.I.G. was completely ripped off.
What?
The whole thing, the name, Juicy, the like, you listen, there was a rapper before him named Notorious B1. And he had a song called Juicy. And you listen to it, and it's literally fucking, like you listen to the song and you're like, holy fuck, like this is Biggie I'm listening to.
And it's before Biggie.
Yeah, it's like he has his own, or sorry, his he claims Juicy, like the song Biggie had, Juicy, one of the most popular songs on the album, is a ripoff of his song Big Daddy. And you listen to it, and it's like, fuck, I think, I'm pretty sure it's even like, instead of, I love it when you call me Big Pop, it's like, I love when you call me Big Daddy. Like, it's like bad. It's,
wow, and he just blatantly stole it then.
The guy's name is Notorious B1. Yeah. As opposed to Notorious B.I.G. They're both fucking big fat guys. Like, it's weird. It's like, yeah, I don't know. And the guy's not bad, too. I kind of feel bad for him. So right away, go ahead.
I was going to say, so I was like, I wonder if this guy like tried to sue him or anything. But I guess it gets to a point where these guys have so much money and power and influence that it's almost fruitless because they can just bleed you to death.
Well, not even that though, but as we're going to probably establish in a little bit here, it's like, yeah, you know what? You definitely could sue him, but at the same time, Sean's been taking other routes of getting his way. And a lot of that has to do with fucking violence and intimidation and makes you wonder maybe this, you know, the gangster rapper type gimmick, maybe there wasn't so much of a gimmick with him. Like, this was a dangerous guy.
Yeah. Look, I've heard tons of stories about him now, but I mean, I remember one story was like, wasn't he involved in like straight up involved in a shooting at like a bowling alley where like numerous people got killed and he somehow like just skirted out of not even getting in any kind of trouble?
Well, so that was a rapper under his label named Shine, who was like, first album comes out, Shine rises right to the fucking top. Great artist. It's around the same time that he's dating Jennifer Lopez. They go out to a nightclub, having a good time, partying. Supposedly, he starts arguing with this infamous drug dealer, and the drug dealer pulls out one of those, you know, like brick-style fucking stacks of cash and smacks Puffy in the face with it. Money goes everywhere. Everybody's running around grabbing for cash. They back up. Him and Shine both pull out pistols. Three people get shot. One of the people that got shot is this woman who got shot in the fucking face. She's like, I was shot in the face, which means I was looking directly fucking at him when I got shot. I know that it was Puff Daddy that shot me. I know it was Sean Combs that shot me. They go to court and every single fucking witness comes out against the fucking, the rapper Shine that was with him. And then fucking Puffy turns on him too. And Shine ends up doing 2 years for the shooting, even though you have fucking numerous witnesses saying, Puffy was shooting people too, and I don't even think he got probation.
No, I was pretty sure he skirted out of any kind of trouble from that.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. Like, so anyways, establishes big Bad Boy Records. Things are going great. This is where he builds a relationship with 13-year-old Usher. Tells him, hey, you know what? Come live with me for a year, and we can fucking wrestle over the cornflakes like that fucking creepy ass clip. Did you see that?
Wasn't he also like, didn't he try to take Bieber under his wing?
And Bieber, thank God, poor little Canadian kid was like, no.
Well, obviously no, someone in the know.
I'm allergic to fucking baby oil. Keep that shit away from me.
I get a rash real bad. Yeah. But yeah, I was pretty sure he tried to bring him under his wing and do the same kind of thing when he was a minor to him.
Probably. He's probably done this to how many different fucking people that we don't even know of. So he's established his record, and this is right around the 94 time. And this is when shit, rap has never been crazier, because this is right around the time that the East Coast, West Coast drama starts. Right. So, it all kind of starts when Bad Boy Records decided to hire Tupac to record some verses on Biggie's new song, which oddly enough was posthumously released in 03. It was the Running from the Police. Fucking good tune. So they hired Tupac. And on November 30th, 1994, while in a New York recording studio, he was working with a guy named Ron G. They're working on their track, and fucking Tupac's pager's just beat going off like crazy. And finally he checks and he's missed like five or six calls from Puff Daddy. He's like, well, it's fucking kind of weird, right? Calls him back and basically Puffy's like, I'm working with Jimmy Henchman is what the guy's name was right now. He wants you to come stop by.
I mean, if you could, what an ominous name. You know what I mean?
Right? Well, 100%, right? So I'm like, I'm working with Jimmy Henchman right now. We'll give you seven grand.
And we got Mark Murderer gym. Over here.
that's honestly. Yeah. And so they're going to pay him for the verse that he did with Biggie. They're going to pay him for some new stuff that he's going to lay down tonight. And at this time, Tupac's dealing with a ton of fucking legal troubles. I think somebody charged him of rape, something like that. So he's like, okay. So he's on his way to the studio. As he's walking up, there's people kind of popped out of one of the top floor buildings and he can hear him yelling his name. Right. And he looks up and it's Little C's and a few other guys from the Bad Boy label. He arrives there. He's got a couple friends with him, goes in the lobby and he notices some kind of two sketchy guys. And these two sketchy guys put on masks, pull out guns and try to rob him, beat him at gunpoint. Shakur, Tupac, kind of puts up a bit of a fight and ends up getting shot. Right away, as he's fucking lying on the ground, the fucking elevator doors supposedly open up and there's fucking Biggie and Sean Combs on the elevator. So they saw the entire thing that happened. He says they didn't come up and check on him, anything like that. So he started
suspicious.
What? Exactly. Right. And so he's basically comes out being like, Bad Boy Records, they set me up. They tried to get me killed. And this is what, this is what gets his suspicions up. And then fucking in 1995, which is like months after this robbery and attempt on Tupac's life, Puffy and Big released the track Who Shot Ya? Right? I'm sure it was produced by Jimmy Henchman as well. Like, right? So Pac's in jail. And he hears about this and obviously he's like, fuck 100%. Like now they're rubbing it in my face. Right.
It's talking about, we shot you. That's what it is. It was us.
Totally. And then, Tupac gets out of jail and releases the most infamous diss track of all time. Hit Him Up, which is to this day biased. Yeah, I'm biased, but it's the best diss track of all time. And absolutely fucking laces these guys, like rips fucking strips off them and both of them. Talks about banging Faith Evans, who was Biggie's wife at the time, and like, right? So that ruthless. Basically pours, pouring gasoline on an already fucking roaring fire. Which takes us to the 1995 Source Awards, which, like, I don't know if you've ever seen clips from this, though, but it's like, it's fucking
nuts. No.
Do you know who Suge Knight is? Yeah, so it's Suge Knight, who is the guy who ran the record label that Tupac was Snoop's with. This guy's like fucking, I think he played semi-pro football. He was going to go to the NFL. The guy's built like an NFL O-lineman. He's a monster. Huge dude.
Yeah, death row.
He gets, death row, they win an award. And the best part about this whole record or this whole award ceremony is the fact that it's in the East Coast. Right. So you're in the heart of this East Coast, West Coast fucking battle. And like album of the year comes up and Death Row wins it. So Suge Knight comes up on the stage wearing all black or all red because he's a blood, right? Comes up and he's like, any artist out there want to be an artist, stay a star and don't have to worry about the executive producer trying to be all up in your videos, all in the recordings, dancing, come to Death Row, which is an exact shot at fucking Puff Daddy. Right? Because he's in everything, like every single music video and the fucking flashy suits, doing his fucking goofy dances and shit like that, right? And that, like, I was fucking nuts. And then Snoop Dogg wins an award and he comes up and everybody's booing him. And he's, remember that, like, fucking, what is it? It's the East Coast don't have love for Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg. And just keeps repeating that and shit. And it's so crazy. Like, anyways. Things get fucking crazy. Conflict between the groups spilled outside at this club where this is a few months later. Big Jaw or Jaw Big Jake Rob.
They think of the best names. I'm sorry, like, the rap names are the best.
Yeah, 100%. My favorite part too. It's like Big Jaw. It's probably like my size. You know, like it's kind of, that's great. Who is like a really close friend of Suge Knight's, right? They're at a party. There's beef. Supposedly, Suge Knight like slaps Jermaine Dupri across the face, grabs Puffy by the neck, right? Like making these guys look like little boys. Starts his huge beef. He's there with his best friend. They get broken up. They go outside. Puff Daddy and Suge Knight kind of, you know, reconcile a little bit like that. They turn around to leave. And as soon as his buddy turns around, gets popped in the head. Dead, right? And that's fucking Suge Knight's best friend.
Yeah. So now it's like, now it's on. Like, it's, like these guys are.
You want to know something funny? So I wasn't very old, but this is like probably like mid-90s, yeah, like 95, 96. I'm just a kid.
Little kids.
But I had older cousins who loved rap music. So I loved rap music. I loved Tupac. And
as
shit.
You listen to the Backstreet
Boys.
So
I'd go to school. I used to think I was hard. I'd always steal my dad's like beer shirts and wear them to school really long and wear hats like sideways and stuff. I was the only kid with a tan in my school. So
I think I'm black.
Yeah, pretty much at the time.
I'm like
skin.
In
1996, right? Dude, I wore my pants backwards because of crisscross. It was bad. So I used to talk to everybody about rap music. Nobody knew the fuck I was talking about. But I was a kid. I'm like fucking 9 years old. I used to think his name was Suge Knight. Suge Knight. I'm like, oh yeah, Death Row Suge Knight. Fucking dipshit. But anyways.
He's so cool.
So Sean Combs gets away with this, right? He's not the guy that pulled the trigger, supposedly. No charge come about. But this fucking beef is like at a boiling point, right? Like, so Combs, basically feeling invincible, decides to schedule a West Coast tour.
Yeah, like fucking, let's go into the heart of the enemy here.
100%. But the thing where, you know about Sean P. Diddy Combs, he's not stupid, right? He's intelligent. So he thinks.
He's a villain. He's what he is.
Totally. And he knows, like, okay, so we'll get back to fucking henchmen. What does any like villain know? Well, they need henchmen. They need people to fucking protect. You need people to die before they get to you. So he has these connections from a
he's like, this is my new partner, Carl Cannon Fodder.
Exactly.
He's going to roll with us.
So he makes a connection at some point in the West Coast with a guy. He borrows a car from the shop that has hydraulics. Well, it turns out this guy was a high-ranking member of the Southside Crips. Right. So he decides, he's like, okay, listen, he calls him up. His name's Keefy D. Tells him we're going to Keefy D, legit. Dude,
he calls up names.
100%. Yeah. But listen, the guy's, he's a high ranking member. But again, this just again plays into how smart Sean Combs is because this is a high ranking member of the Southside Crips. Everybody knows, like we just talked about, what did Suge Knight come out wearing to the war source awards? Yeah. All red. Suge Knight is blood. Death Row is blood. Right? So that right there, it's like playing these two sides against each other. So he hires them to be their security for the fucking, for the tour. And everything ends up going well. There's no attacks during the fucking tour. And then they don't really run into each other until the R&B Soul Awards. Where fucking Death Row shows up with a whole bunch of fucking bloods and basically scares P. Diddy and Biggie and they run away, which I don't blame them. And after that, supposedly Puff Daddy is furious, right? He's like, they're embarrassed. We can't ever have that again. This is when Sean Combs supposedly reaches out to Keefy D and offers him $1 million to kill fucking Suge Knight and Tupac. And this is according to Keefy D.
So like he's literally putting
a hit on him by the fucking head of the Crips. So on the night of September 7th, 1996, Shakur was in Las Vegas. You know, it's kind of nice little timing here, but he was in there to watch the Sheldon Tyson fight.
Oh, yeah.
where we just watched Mike Tyson fight. This is back when Mike Tyson could
stand. That fight, no one's killing anyone after watching the last Mike Tyson fight.
No.
God. Maybe yourself.
Well, I mean, like, maybe it's fucking right. So they go to the MGM Grand, Shug and Suge and Tupac to watch the fight. Prior to the fight, in the lobby, Tupac gets in an altercation with somebody who later turns out to be a man named Orlando Brown, right? Who is Orlando Anderson, sorry, not Orlando Brown, Orlando Anderson, who just happens to be the fucking Keith Eddie's nephew. What are the chances of that?
He's there. Small world.
Right?
But I mean, maybe that's why they're getting an altercation. Like, they know each other, or they know of each other. Or maybe, he's there.
Maybe they're both in town for the Tyson fight.
He's there to cause shit. Like, KVD's nephew's there. Because he's like, I know there's a $1 million hit on you. Right?
Totally. Yeah. Totally. And then, you know, fight happens. Everybody kind of leaves. Around 11 p.m., Shug and Pac are stopped at a stoplight. A car pulls up beside them with some women yelling Tupac's name. Kind of distracted. On the other side, a late model Cadillac sedan pulled up to the passenger side, and the occupant started letting off shots.
They started blasting.
Shakur was struck.
Shakur
was struck four times in the arm, one in the thigh, and twice in the chest, with one of the bullets entering his lung. And then Suge Knight only took some shards, by the sounds of it, to the face. Shakur was later taken to the University Medical Center of Southern Nevada, where he was later pronounced
deceased.
Dead.
Yeah.
Deceased, toast. That's it. R.I.P.
Well, if you're to believe witnesses and accounts, this is a direct, and I'll kind of touch more on this later on because it's going to be interesting with how things were unfolding now, but like, this is a direct hit placed from P. Diddy onto someone for murder. Like,
according to Keefe D, who was the passenger in the vehicle of the fucking Cadillac. You know who's driving?
His nephew?
Orlando Anderson. Orlando Brown, whatever the one it is, right? So, it's a little bit weird. And now you kind of fast forward 6 months, right? 6 months, everything's going well. Nobody suspects Diddy, not anything like that. Everything's going well. Puff Daddy kind of reaches out to Biggie at the time. He's like, listen, like, I need you to come to the West Coast. I need you at this award ceremony, but most of all, I need you at a after party, right? You got to make this appearance at an after party, or was he being paid, whatever, I don't know, right? But it was really important that he come to this after party. Right before this happened, Biggie was in an accident, fractured his femur. Right. So this is a large man with a full leg cast. Right. So if you have a femur fracture, they gotta cast the above joint and the below joint. Exactly. Right. So it's big. He's already huge. Like, he's 6 foot something, 300 pounds with a giant leg cast. And he wants him to hop. Totally. He wants him to hop on a fucking tiny ass plane. Right. No, I don't want anything to do with this. And plus, it's in the fucking West Coast. The guy can't run.
And I had heard, like, from some of the readings that I've done, is that even flying with his injury was a little risky. Yes.
Blood clots.
And it was like, even that, it was like 100%. Advised not to fly.
You gotta get, if that were to happen to you, you would have to get a doctor's note to fly. Yeah. So anyways, after some lengthy convincing, he convinces him to go. And now I know you're going to be extremely shocked by this, but after leaving the after party, while Suburban stopped at a red light, a black Chevy Impala pulled up to the right side window and they started blasting. Rest in peace, Biggie. Almost identical to the way that Tupac died, Biggie died. And
that shooting, and both on the West Coast, and that basically ends the East Coast West Coast feud, is because they're like, there's just too much now, and they call it like a truce.
The biggest, the two biggest names in your genre of music are now gone. The two brightest lights in your industry fucking wiped off the planet, right? And it's super interesting because now you start looking into it. Okay, you remember how I was talking about the fact that Diddy kind of overstepped Andre Harrell to start Big Boy. Or Bad Boy, right? By going through Clive Davis, right? right at the same time, supposedly Clive Davis set up a fucking trip for Biggie to go to Europe to establish himself overseas, big public appearances, all that type of stuff. Apparently, Diddy had no idea about this, right? And it almost sounds like you look at everything, and we're going to get into it more, but Puffy is so big on control and dominance. And now it's like, this is your main artist and somebody's kind of stepping in and trying to fucking take him away to do press junkets in the fucking, you know, in the UK and shit like that. To me, like, you look at that, you look at the fact that it's like, okay, there's a lot of heat on me for the murder of Tupac. Well, now Biggie's dead. Maybe that's going to take a little bit of heat off the thing. Now I get to mourn. Now all of Biggie's record sales are going to fucking skyrocket. You're going to come up with all the tribute. I'll be missing you, all that type of shit. A lot of people talk about the fact that, like, maybe there was some insurance money involved. Even the fact that maybe Biggie's star was just, you know, going a little bit too bright and outshining.
Can I tell you my little theory on this? So after kind of learning more into the like how Diddy is, he does seem like a control person, but also at the same time, like a little bit cowardly in some certain circumstances. Like he plays off. Part of me, after reading like all the other indictments and stuff that have come out, part of me wondered if he didn't just do this to Biggie himself to then be like, guys, we got to call a truce. Right?
Totally. That's what I mean. Like it completely takes the heat off of him and everything else. It's like,
we got to call a truce now. Right. This is too much. Yeah. But then it's like, really, he just sacrificed his own buddy to make sure there was no retribution against him, because obviously he would be facing the retribution. Like the target would be on him in this scenario.
And at the time too, it sounds like kind of Biggie was the major player on his record label. And if he's worried for whatever reason, let's say Clive Davis wants to take him over to Arista, whatever, right? Maybe he's worried about that happening too. Right. Like and the similarities between the way that him and Tupac died are just, I don't know. It's crazy. But like this, right after that, I was going to get in. I had a little write up on what we talked about earlier. The shooting with Shine and so we've already kind of discussed that, right? So that happens in 1999, right? And then Shine ends up going to jail for 10 years. And right when Shine kind of like P. Diddy was in the fucking newspapers, he's in the media and everything, first time like negatively, right? Like this is the first time we're like, holy fuck,
this guy's involved.
Because before this, all the stuff with Tupac is speculated, right? Like this is hitting mainstream news, everything like that. This is when he does the big image overhaul. This is when Puff Daddy goes away and he becomes P. Diddy, right? This is where he starts trying to go after new acts. He tries to recruit 50 Cent and Exhibit. And if you talk to
50 Cent, the only person who hates, like there's not a true like life haters. The only person 50 Cent might hate P. Diddy more than Bret Hart hates Goldberg. Bill Goldberg.
Yeah, 100%. And that's even more than Shawn Michaels.
It's like 50 Cent has like made it his mission before all this come out is to ruin it. He's like, this guy's a creep. He's a pedophile. Yeah.
They talk about a bit. Well, that's the thing. He mentions a few times. It's like when you try to take him to these, they try to recruit him and they're taking him to all these like kind of weird sex parties. And there's a lot of like, you know, man on man intimacy and stuff. And they're just like, well, you know, like not for me. And like 50 Cent says, he's like, P. Diddy's telling me he's going to take me out shopping and shit like that. He's like, what the fucking, I don't need you to take me out shopping. Like it's weird, right? Like just, so they're both kind of weirded out. He ended up signing them.
That's grooming behavior, brother. If someone comes to me, it's like, but that's what I'm saying. You know, maybe I'll let you buy a couple nice things for me, but it's still weird.
No, I was groomed. Scary. Remember Dirty Diana? Yeah. She groomed me for a bit. That was terrifying. Anyways, so that kind of takes us to the spot where, you know, we're getting the first real big red flags, you know, and this is kind of when I wanted to, you know, get into, I don't know if you want to take a beer break or not, but this is when I was going to get into more of like Kim Porter and Cassie Ventura.
Yeah, let's take a quick beer break right now. Listen up, Theorites. Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. If you haven't finished your holiday shopping yet, don't panic. Don't panic. We've got a secret source for incredible original gifts, and that's Uncommon Goods. They've got unique hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. You got customizable snowflake ornaments. Or how about Harold the Hedgehog watering can? He is adorable. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/alien. That's uncommongoods.com/alien. For 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
We're back!
Okay.
Oh, what a break. Oh,
crazy.
Refreshed.
So, let's get into a little bit of his, like, personal relationships. Right? So, he was married to a lady named Kim Porter, who was actually, oddly enough, previously married to Albie Sure. I don't know. Was an old school rapper. They were together for a while, had some kids. I think he ended up raising one of Albie Sure's and Porter's kids as well. Well, they end up divorcing. And this is where you see more of this like control and like psychotic control issues this guy's got. Like so they separate. He ends up getting her phone tapped.
It's super.
Right? So he ends up fucking.
Like, I don't even know how you would go about that. You'd have to hire like private, like. Like, and it's got to be super.
He's got a guy. He's got a guy. I'm going to talk about him later. But so they end up tapping her phone. She tries to like meet up with some people, tracks her down, beats the shit out of the guy, breaks her nose. Right. She was trying to date some guy named Shakur Stewart, who was, I think he was an attorney at the time, and like literally made this guy a fucking enemy for like, this guy was scared for his life after this. Like he was found dead in 2008. And up until he died, he was claiming he was being followed by people with a fear that fucking...
Some of the stuff, like, okay, so when you've... I don't know if we've really talked about it on the show, but, like, the term gang stalking has really kind of taken, like, a rise in the last, I'd say, 10 years. But a lot of the stuff that, you know, that falls into gang stalking kind of sounds like what Diddy was doing to people. Like, he was paying, like... these henchmen and stuff to follow to tail. Phones were getting tapped. You were being spied on. You were being video recorded, like at any faucet of your life. And it's almost like he was trying to like just catch you in a vulnerable moment that he could use against you.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, we've heard actions like this kind of similar, not exactly the same, but like it seems very Epstein-esque where he's trying to catch you in these fucking moments. And I'm going to get into why I think that's a thing. But we got to talk about his next, I don't know. I'm pretty sure they were married. I'm not sure. I don't have it written down though, but he starts dating a woman that was signed to his label by the name of Cassie Ventura.
And Cassie was,
I mean, we all know music.
Cassie was like, I mean, when she signed and like they started being together, I think she was like 18.
Like, I think she was even younger than that, to be honest.
Dude. Well, I'll take that back and reset it. When they were publicly together, she had just turned 18.
Thank you. Yeah.
When they were public.
So,
and what was the one banger? She had one banger. Do you remember which one it was?
It's going to bug me.
What was it called? Cassie hit song.
Long Way to Go.
How does it go?
Me and you.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the one. You know the one I'm talking about? Like she has one really good banger. Anyways, but like produced by her. Like he's, you know, with her, but at the same time, he's like, listen, we're gonna be records, baby. Records on records. Like, yeah. You're gonna be a star, baby.
And unfortunately, she was the star of many a forced cockhold fucking drugging sex tapes. So he used to get guys, they would hire male fucking prostitutes and then get her fucked up on drugs and make her have sex with
him. And she became like almost estranged from all her friends and family at the time. He wasn't allowed to, like, there's accounts of her and her friends, like she would leave and get away from him for a little bit. And she would just be, he would be blowing up her phone. Where the fuck are you? Who are you with? Where the fuck are you right now?
Psychotic
like,
behavior.
And she would be like, this is anytime I leave him, this is what it's like.
There's like a really, you know, unfortunate, like when everything started going south for Diddy, they released a video and where you can see him physically like throw her to the ground, kick her multiple times, grab a vase, smash it on her, like horrible shit.
Yeah, that's the hotel video. He's like stomping on her. Like it is brutal to watch. Like this is, I mean, like when I watch that video, I go, oh, that's not a first time he's hit a woman.
The fucking violence, yeah, man. Like it's
scary. That's someone. And like, you know, that's if you're doing that to the person you're supposed to be with, you know what I mean? Like that, what are you doing behind the scenes?
Well, if you, totally. Like, and what are you doing for people you don't care about?
Yeah. It will.
And then they end up separating. She starts dating Kid Cudi, who, you know, by all accounts, like right when Kid Cudi first came out, guy had fucking so many bangers, right? He was super popular. Everybody loved him. Diddy found out and threatened to blow up his car. And then all of a sudden, shockingly, Cudi's fucking car blew up. And the guy ends up fucking falling from the spotlight. Doesn't make any more music. It's not popular anymore. I think the last time I heard from him, he made a song on Sonic, the Hedgehog movie. You know, like things aren't going well. One of the big things for Diddy too is if Cassie was going to continue to be, you know, a musician, she wasn't allowed to do any studio sessions with other men, other rappers. She ended up going behind his back. You know, she obviously had no idea he was tracking her. And was doing a song with a rapper by the name of Wale. He crashes the studio party and he grabbed Wale and apparently had him held over a 17th floor balcony by his ankles.
It's insane. This is like fucking,
it's like a mobster movie.
Mafia shit.
Yeah, and then, you know, later Kim Porter ends up dying in the process of writing a tell-all book about her relationship with Diddy.
Well, it's like everyone around this guy that has any kind of issue with him turns up dead or stuff, bad shit happens to them. Like this stuff with Cassie too, like when he beat her, he made a video almost immediately that was posted to his social media and stuff. You know, he's saying, oh, you know, I fully take account for my actions. I was messed up. I was on drugs and I'm in rehab now for this. And that was totally not in my character. And I take full responsibility, trying to really sway his public image. And like, that's kind of a big thing too. Cause you looked at that time and like, he did like a press tour after about like how reformed he was and like, you know, what a bad thing that was that happened. But he like, this is when like, Cassie starts coming out with this stuff you hear about the freak offs for the first time, right? When this video starts to come up, she's like, well, he would pay sex workers and they'd come. And it was so bad. These things would go on for like days at a time where she would be like in there and be having to perform sex acts with, not with Diddy, with male prostitutes that he would fly in and he would just watch and he would direct the scenes and just sit there stroking himself. And it was so bad and so exhausting and at times so violent that he would have his employees who he had trained to give IVs, bring in IVs to replenish Cassie and the performers, like the male sex workers.
Fucked up, man. That's
so
fucked up.
So messed up.
And that's like, That's so fucked up. So you want to get crazy? Yeah, even though we've already got crazy, but this is fucking crazy. Do you want to talk about one of those sex workers he supposedly paid to have sex with Cassie? This is a gentleman by the name of Jonathan Odie, a South African porn star who was arrested in 2018 for opening fire inside the Trump National Doral Miami Hotel. He unfolded a gigantic American flag over the lobby counter, then proceeded to get into a shootout with the police. During the shootout, he allegedly ranted about three people: Donald Trump, Barack Obama, and P. Diddy. You can watch the video. Yeah, have you seen it?
Crazy.
It's fucking crazy. He was yelling shit like, Trump is a Hitler, Obama is Osama, kill all police. Crazy shit. So fast forward to where Odie was being questioned by the investigators following his arrest. He, for some reason, volunteered up that he was a sex slave for P. Diddy and Cassie, that they would make him drink liquid cocaine and he would perform whatever degrading sex acts Diddy ordered him to do. He said he caught herpes from them. He also very much wanted the police to know that P. Diddy, Rick Ross, and DJ Khaled were all gay, and that he contacted herpes from Diddy, sued him, and won, and said that Diddy had a plot to assassinate Trump. So at the time, all this shit was ignored because this was 2018, right? None of it, nobody knew about any of this shit. And considering what the fuck we know now, like, he's right about more than he's wrong.
Yeah, well, and it, I mean, Diddy was probably, he was probably in custody at the time of the Trump assassination attempt. So it's like, we can't link it. But it's very, very interesting that, you know, could he have put wheels in motion before then? Maybe.
Totally. Right?
Maybe. And like, okay, if you think about, so since this has come out, right? Now, let's get into some of the legal stuff. So the Cassie Ventura lawsuit is settled. And it basically talks about the freak, the multiple years of abuse, the beating, basically holding her, holding her career hostage and all this stuff. And
ruined her career,
using his vast power to do this kind of stuff. All of a sudden, prosecutors, and my guess is prosecutors and investigators have had him red dotted somewhere. Investigators and law enforcement probably have known about him. They just have never had enough to act. So when this lawsuit comes in, and it's just a civil lawsuit, but because the civil lawsuit kind of gets a little far and Cassie kind of reveals all this stuff, and it settled unbelievable fast. I think it's 2 days. 2 days. And then everything's sealed. The agreements are made to seal everything. She signs NDAs. And, you know, he puts out a statement. I wish Cassie and her family all the best. We have decided to resolve this matter amicably as friends. Right. And then now this motherfucker, a year ago, is in full damage control, because now that these allegations have come to light, prosecutors are going like, all right, this is interesting, right? So everyone's kind of like, spotlights are on him. He starts preemptively making calls that he recorded himself, that P. Diddy recorded the own calls, and he would call other victims uncoerced. No one asked him to. He just was like, this will be a good idea. I should call the other victims, because now the other people might know the info of this last lawsuit and they might start coming after me for money. But what he doesn't realize is that's not all that's coming after him at this point. Like, it's the money's not the prosecution is now swirling. So
he starts
calling them and basically just being like, hey, listen, I need your support. I need your public support. I need your friendship. You know, like all the stuff, you know, remember the freak parties? Yeah. You wanted it. You had fun at the freak parties. We all had fun at the freak parties. We're being freaks. That's why we're having freak offs, right? We're all freaking each other. It was all freaky. We're having freaky fun. And yep. he, for months and months, he and his associates start making unsolicited calls to people that he thinks could possibly, you know, sue him or come out of the woodworks.
So supposedly too, like not to derail you too quick, apparently he was also calling all his old talent and basically telling them like, I will give you back all the rights to your music if you sign an NDA.
Yeah.
Like sound more shady.
It's so then, he's making these calls again, November 19th. He's calling, he calls multiple victims, and it just so happens that, November 23rd of that year, there is, what's called the Adult Survivors Act. And it's a New York law permitting victims of sexual abuse, 1 year window to file civil action, regardless of the statute of limitations. Right. So what happens on the eve of this? Two more women come forward with civil lawsuits against Combs for allegedly sexual assaults, beatings, forced druggings, all from the...
very Cosby-esque.
Yeah, very Cosby-esque.
Like, what is with the drugging with these? Like, it's fucking weird. Well, like, not sexual assault is fucking weird, but like the drugging?
Well, I think it's
like,
easier if people are drugged to, you know, just to...
Well, it's... They, do whatever he wants, I guess. Because like they, a lot of the one lady's like, I woke up fucking confused and sore and like didn't know where I was. Like, it's just horrific, man.
So like it's just, it's basically nonstop onslaught for PDD at this point. People are coming out of the woodworks. You know, another woman alleges that in 2003, when she was 17, Combs and two other men raped her back and forth. After flying her to like his New York studio apartment where she, they were like, we're going to make you famous. We're going to, you know, do all this for it. And then they just basically fed her drugs and alcohol until she was incapacitated and like, you know, raped her all day. It was brutal.
It's so fucked up.
And so this goes on just like people are coming out of the woodworks. A male music producer says that Diddy forced him to have sex with prostitutes. And like, and it was basically
groped his anus.
And it was like, lost, tickled his anus, bare anus. Okay, you could have left that out. the lawsuit gives a long list of potentially illegal activities dealing with drugs and sex that the producer says he witnessed. And then, boom, March 25th, 2024, Homeland Security Investigation serves a warrant in the early morning and raids Combs' homes in Los Angeles and Miami. What officials tell the Associated Press is a sex trafficking investigation. So basically, the next day, they don't really say anything. Like they, the prosecutors, they don't really say anything at the time. Like they tell the Associated Press that's a half. His sons are handcuffed. Like it's a
My favorite part about this too is like, he comes out later to be like, because his sons are handcuffed. They're like, they took my kids, King and Justin, by gunpoint. And I'm like, what, like you got one kid named fucking Justin and then another kid named King. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck? Like, he can't have like a Steve and then fucking Jesus. Right? Like, it's just, like, it doesn't I'm fucking,
I'm guessing King's the firstborn.
Well, so I mean, like, what, imagine being Justin though? Being like, what's your brother's
name? Oh, he's King.
You know? Could have been Prince at least. Prince,
yeah, that would have been good.
You know, fuck.
So March 25th, like they raid this Duke. And like the prosecutor's keeping like pretty much a tight lid on what's happening here. March 26th, Combs' lawyer calls the raid a gross use of military force and it Combs is innocent. Combs is going to turn himself into police. And he goes, we expect this to be something to do with some sort of sex trafficking ring and drugging women. And basically says everything that is the prosecutor is about to say he's about to be charged with before prosecution has made an announcement that he's charged with it. So prosecution comes out, and this is fucking insane. Prosecution comes out and says they've actually been digging into this guy for quite some time and keeping tabs on him. And they're now doing basically what is called a RICO charge on PD. Yeah. And so
That's how they got all the New York mob, man. Yeah. RICO.
Well, like, and that the RICO crazy. Ones, it's a super expensive and like costly investigation, but it's basically for like racketing. It's for It's for organized crime.
Big wigs.
It's for mafias.
It's for fucking the John Gottis of the world.
But it's also for like corrupt police organizations. It's so prosecution can link seemingly unconnected crimes to a criminal organization. And the thing with Diddy is he's made a habit now of paying people around him to do these things. So if you were Diddy's servant, you know, you were his Jimmy henchman and he sent you to...
But what was Charleston Bentley or whatever? The dude with the fucking, umbrella, you remember? The guy that was always in his music videos?
Like if you're that guy and he sent you to, you know, to pick up one of the 1,000 bottles of baby oil that he used and they confiscated from his house, you are now a part of this now criminal investigation, which means prosecution can come after you. So basically they are able to go after every single person in Diddy's employ to try to flip them.
And one of these people that I guarantee you is going to be one of the main men on their fucking list. I don't know if you heard of this guy, but his name's Fahim Mohammed. Have you heard that name pop up yet? No. So this is Diddy's head of security. Basically described as his Mr. Fix It, who could make any problem with the law enforcement or anybody else disappear. Interestingly enough too, he was also someone else's head of security, Michael Jackson's. All right. He landed his job with Michael Jackson just 3 months after graduating fucking university in 2008. He initially was employed as MJ's driver, then became a bodyguard. But within 10 months, within 10 months of Jackson dying of the overdose, he was the head of security at just 21 years old. Following MJ's death, Mohammed moved to work in a similar position for Diddy, where he wielded the same sort of power, according to a lawsuit filed by Little Rod, who is the producer that had his bum tickled by Diddy. Mr. Combs made it clear that his head of security, Fahim Mohammed, had the power to make people and problems disappear. Mr. Combs instructs his staff to always contact Mr. Mohammed if they're ever pulled over by the police in Miami or California. Little Rod claims that Mohammed has close connections with the LAPD. After P. Diddy's mansion was raided, there was several photographs of Mohammed like overseeing everything the police were doing. And according to him, apparently he covered up some shootings that Combs' son, Justin, not King, was part of. But apparently this guy also bought up a shit ton of property out on the southern border of Tijuana. And it's like, why would anyone own a shit ton of property there other than fucking...
trafficking.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Right? RICO stands for Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. And it basically allows victims to sue those responsible for punitive damages. So we're seeing that with Epstein right now, with the Epstein Victims Compensation Fund, where if you were a victim of like the Epstein Island or that trafficking ring, you can sue. And what they've gathered from Epstein's assets and stuff, they pay out these victims. One thing I learned about that, though, that I thought was super fucking interesting is, if you receive a payout from the Epstein family, the Epstein Victim Compensation Fund, it also comes with an NDA, and it also comes with an agreement that once you take a settlement, you cannot go after any other person involved. Right? Really? Is that
in the small print when they do their big like tort lawyer fucking commercials on TV? Were you recently drugged and raped by fucking one of these famous people? Yeah. Like, if so, we'll call now. You might be entitled to a settlement.
Don't talk about it and you can't sue anyone else. The RICO allows, if something gets deemed like it was a RICO case, it allows prosecutors to charge multiple people who commit separate crimes while working towards a common goal. So that's, you know, it just broadens the scope of what prosecutors' powers are, and it can tie all these, you know, unconnected crimes together to show that this is some sort of crime syndicate run by P. Diddy. So this is a couple insane facts. I was listening to some interviews with prosecution, or just some press release with prosecution. Since they've made it public that this is going on with P. Diddy, since 2022 is when prosecution started fielding calls specifically to this case. So even before it hit the press, 14,000 people 14,000 people have contacted the prosecutors to date, like from then to now. And the prosecution has approved far 293 lawsuits. They're all separate against P. Diddy regarding this, like this RICO case. That's it's going to be sex trafficking and coercion and just running a criminal enterprise. One of the stats, and I'm going to have to read Dan's notes on this. He prepared some notes for us. it says from prior to 2004, most of the incidents involved men and women equally, but after 2005, it was 90% gay shit. That's what Dan
says. Dan, oh, come on, man. That's some tact, buddy.
But yeah, after 2005, primarily men are coming out of the woodworks being like, they were the ones involved. So it's earlier it was that. But if you think
Reginald Vell Johnson,
the thing is too,
dad from Family Matters.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot that was a rumor. But then it's like, dude, you start to see like, oh, hold on, let me go back to my other notes here. Absolutely insane. The amount of people involved in this, and then the amount of people who have scrubbed their social medias, like, you know, Megan Fox's, Usher's, Jennifer Lopez, all these people that have been, you know, spotted at these white parties and all this stuff are just scrubbing their social medias of anything to do with Diddy in the past. And I'm just like, well, that's kind of interesting. Like,
well, nobody's coming out for them. That's for damn sure. Yeah.
Zell just said, I'm going to bed. I have to catch an airport. We've been recording for 2 hours. What do you mean? We never thought you were coming on.
He said he was coming.
I don't know. He just said, I'm going to bed now.
He said this entire time.
He wasn't not coming this week. Where was he the whole time?
Okay.
So basically, and the prosecutor says, the victims so far the youngest is 9 years old. The average age is 14 of victims of when these offenses happened.
My God. What a fucking right.
So like,
shit.
You know, very Epstein-esque now. Right. And it's alleged that Diddy was filming people, while these freak offs were taking place and then using,
getting dirt
on them, not only for just his own manipulations, but just the fact that, so then he could be like, listen, if you don't do this again with us, you know, maybe this video hits the internet.
And here's the thing, like, I don't know, do you got more? Because I kind of want to go off on a bit of a tangent here.
I'll just get into there was all this stuff. But in September, just a couple months ago, September 16th, he's arrested after the grand jury indictment. And he's basically, the indictment's unsealed and it describes him as the head of a criminal enterprise that engaged or attempted to engage in sex traffic, forced labor, interstate transportation for the purposes of prostitution, drug offenses, kidnapping, arson, bribery, and obstruction of justice. It says he engaged in a persistent and pervasive pattern of abuse toward women and other individuals, including physical violence, in order to fulfill his sexual desires, to protect his reputation and conceal his conduct. He pled not guilty, but the judge, because of his vast network and the seriousness of the offenses, denied him bail. And even when they came back and they were like, hey, we'll do a $50 million bail, the judge was like, no. So right now he's sitting in jail in New York City. A little update, like even last week, prosecutors are saying that he's making attempts to coerce and persuade victims and jury from jail. Because they record his phone calls and stuff, and he's calling his family and orchestrating, this is what you have to post. This is what you have to say. You have to, you know, talk to so-and-so and get them to post this about me. Like he's trying to manipulate, public opinion right now from jail. It's absolutely insane.
It's too late, buddy. So pack it in. You're going to get all your fucking mail on mail loving there. You can get
so many freak offs.
Like, what do you, shower freak offs, drop the soap all you want. You know, what's really interesting to me though. It's like all of a sudden you get this RICO case And you got to think this guy's been under America's for a while. He's been involved in multiple shootings, all this type of stuff. And it's like, so he's already under the radar, right? And maybe he already has propensity to film people get dirt on him. And it's all of a sudden, it's like, maybe, you know, like it's very weird to me. It's like all of a sudden, you know, you can get away with shooting someone in the face, right? And you get off. But now it's like the hammer's coming down on every single thing you've done, you've been a part of, and everything you do. And it's like you're no longer useful to us anymore. It's like, was he gathering fucking dirt for himself or for himself and for other important people? It gets very Epstein-esque, you know, where like we look at Epstein's mansion and he's got that fucking picture of George Bush in a or Bill Clinton in a dress, yeah, and George Bush playing with the blocks. And it was always speculated that he got, you know, dirt on certain people for certain reasons. And then it makes you kind of unpack the entire hip hop industry in a whole, because it's always been alleged that whether it's the music industry or the, you know, government three letter government agencies that actively promoted gangster rap, right? Because they wanted to glorify, you know, misogyny and violence and criminal behavior in like the young African American communities, right? Completely undermining positive cultural, you know, impacts, yeah, that they would have, right? They would always, let's promote this shitty behavior so these people don't go anywhere, right? During the 80s and 90s, record labels intentionally promoted gangster rap over other fucking socially conscious performing acts and shit like that so they could do, yeah, this kind of stuff. And like, who's pulling the strings here? Right? Like they go to their way to glamorize fucking violence.
What's crazy, because like people are like, oh, it's just and music. And you're like, no, they're singing about what they're doing. That's what they're rapping about, what they were doing. Like, that's the crazy shit.
Did you like, you see who's representing Diddy?
I did see, it's the same guy who did Weinstein, right?
No, it's Ghislaine, yes, Maxwell.
His, that's right,
Bobby Sternheim. Yeah. Like, they got the same legal team. It's like that. Oh, I wonder who gave you that card.
It's very, it's very, know, interesting. Man. The thing is like this is, for me, I'm like, when you think back now, when we know what we know now, looking back, and you think about the lavish white parties he had, where he had everyone who's who, you start to think of like, how much dirt does this guy have on, you know, the Hollywood elite, politicians, right? Like, cause he got the key to the city in New York, right? He was rubbing elbows.
He was awarded an honorary doctorate, yeah, or whatever from Howard.
He was rubbing elbows with these politicians. Like, everyone was going to these parties. It's like, how much dirt did this guy have on everyone? It'll be interesting to see if he stays alive in prison.
There's some weird, like, I remember I was reading about something too, where like him and Cassie got in a big fight and they ended up having to go to the hospital. She had bruises all over his face. And it was said that he was attacking her.
That's right.
She had to defend himself with a corkscrew and he had these deep lacerations down his wrists. And I'm like, did this guy try to kill himself? Right? Like, I didn't trust that. It just doesn't make sense that those are like, you know, she's defending herself with a corkscrew and he just gets slashes on his wrists. Like, I don't know. It's weird.
I don't know.
I'm like, I don't think he makes it. I think he gets suicided, whether he does it himself or somebody does it.
It does make me think too, because you look at these circles where these rings, you know, these sex traffic rings were happening now, and you can really start to connect them, right? You're like, you have Weinstein that was doing it in Hollywood. You have Diddy that was doing it with the music industry. You have Epstein that was seemingly doing it with politicians and everyone. But like, both Diddy and Weinstein were also rubbing elbows with the same people that Epstein was. It makes me think that this is
it's like
a joint effort, and we're just starting to see, you know, the big players in these.
Those are the three major levels of like multimedia, yeah, right? Like music, fucking TV, and yeah, politics. Like, that's fucking, right, crazy.
These three heads of this, like, well, or basically appearing as like the three heads of this, you know, kind of abuse ring of power are, you know, coming down. Does it stop? No. Like, look, it just makes me think of like how much of it is happening. Like, there's other people, you know, that are doing this.
It's very Machiavellian, yeah, hey? Like, you get these guys with this absolute power and it's like, you know, they says like absolute power corrupts all, absolutely. Yeah. Like, It's like you get in these positions and it just seems like literally it gets abused every time.
And we've talked about the show before, like even just like, I think we've talked about in After Hours and stuff about like, with pornography and people just start watching it and, you know, getting into more, it ramps up. And like, you really start to see that with Diddy as well. It's just, he was just like, he's like, watching porn on the computer does not do it for me. I got to watch it live and I got to get more and more freakier stuff going.
And then like you look at how he kind of cut his teeth, and if it's true with the Gabe Davis and Andre Harrell like abuse allegations of like establishing that dominance, that's how he learned. That's how he learned to get into the game and like, oh, I can control these guys by asserting my dominance in this way. It's like, fuck, man. I mean, gone are the days of watching preview play on LimeWire. Like, that's all I needed. That's all I needed, right?
Got a couple.
Now it takes me 20 minutes to find a video.
Yeah, soon you'd be having freak-offs.
All for a fucking... No.
It's that's absolutely wild. And again, this shit's still coming out the word. The trial, if this thing gets to trial...
More is coming.
It's going to be absolutely insane. But one of the interesting things with the RICO case is... I wonder how far back they're going to go with this into what crimes, right? Because like if they start linking, you know, murders and stuff and previous assaults and shootings and stuff back into this, because like everything is back on the table.
Dude, I forgot to mention something too. So you remember with Keefe D, the guy that claimed that Puff Daddy hired him to kill him for $1 million. Supposedly everything went down. And he just never paid him. And that's why he didn't get charged with it. Because there's no proof for the transaction.
And there has to be the exchange of money for the...
Exchange of money for the hit.
For that to be...
So it's like he got it for free.
Well, he probably ratted him out after.
Yeah, I think he's...
But that's the thing. Like,
I don't know if he's still
honestly,
in jail or not.
Because I'm just like... He's that in the public eye. And because it makes you think that... You know, you start to hear rumors and like you would hear rumors about Weinstein long before. Like you can look back now and think Family Guy makes some jokes. Like there were some jabs about Weinstein, right? And
buddy, what about Cosby?
Right, Cosby, yeah, same too.
People were fucking making like sets in their comedy shows. Hannibal Buress was making jokes about Cosby.
He's crazy. But like, all these guys are doing the same shit. You know what I mean? It's like, I wonder if they're like, you know, if there's a bigger thing going on. That we're just even still not aware of, but it makes me think of like, and this is just purely speculative now, but like, you know, you hear those rumors about Drake, right? And stuff like that. And it's,
That whole dude, like that whole hip hop agenda that I kind of touched on earlier, like that's that Odie guy was going on about. And he's like, the hip hop agenda is you're taking these rappers who have all these private jets and you're basically using them to traffic drugs the entire time. And it's like, it sounds all crazy and shit like that. And then you look at that one rapper named Juice WRLD. He had a heart attack while his plane was getting raided, where they busted him for having a bunch of fucking drugs on it. Like not like drugs to traffic, not like personal use, like bunch of little Ziploc bags. Like it's fucking crazy. Like maybe there is something to be said for this.
Could you imagine that? Like, could you imagine that? Because we always think that, like, we talk about, like, you know, all these crime syndicates running Hollywood or, you know, because that's what it is essentially, is organized crime, right? Doing it professionally.
Well, it used to be ran by the mob. Somebody had to take over.
You have all these like conjoining circles and it's just all one thing. Like the whole media industry is run, and it's also being used to run drugs at the same time. It's like, you know how we profit it? From running fucking, you know who's the biggest player? Taylor Swift. The ringleader.
Yeah. Well, look how many miles, look how many miles she puts on her fucking PJ.
No one traffics more drugs than T-Swift.
No, buddy. That's right.
But
that makes sense. There must be some type of drug that gets let out audibly for these fucking girls while they listen to it. They lose their mind. My wife's trying to talk me into $500 for a ticket to Taylor Swift. That's not crazy. Like, what are you talking about? Can you put that on layaway?
It makes me think. I'm like, I wonder if a lot of these things are more intertwined than we even like to realize, or we just kind of turn a blind eye to it. And like, you know, if you listen to some of these accounts, like maybe these things are way more intertwined with the drug trade and organized crime than we even know of these high, you know, these powerful people.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it definitely, like, especially the Weinstein, I don't know. Some, I haven't seen much about him using, like, it only seemed like he used his power. Position of power yeah. to like, to rape yeah. people basically. Right. Whereas with Diddy and Epstein, it's like, yes, they horrible people, but it seems like one of the big parts for them was getting blackmail. They wanted
it's using like, young underage kids.
Yeah, the pedophilia. Right?
And that's, but horrible. I mean, like, listen, you blackmail someone with that? Like, what, you know what I mean? Like, if you had someone that was 16, right, and you had them and you're at one of Diddy's parties and Diddy gets you drunk and then Diddy's paying this girl to sleep with you and then he records it secretly in the room and then he goes, she was 16. It doesn't matter if Diddy gets busted later on. Like, that's blackmail for life. Like, it doesn't matter, because if that ever comes out for you're
a pedophile.
Yeah, like, you're ruined. Your reputation. It doesn't matter. No yeah. one's gonna go. No one's. You're gonna be like, hey, I was drugged at a Diddy party. Everyone's gonna be like, yeah, but you slept with an underage person. Right? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, you didn't ask any questions. Like, nothing. Like, no one's gonna have sympathy for that person. That. You know, was filmed and put in this situation.
Well, I mean, Rob Lowe kind of got away with it. He's everybody loves him now.
That's right.
He's out of the bucket.
I forgot about Rob Lowe. Well, same with Seinfeld.
Oh yeah, but he married
her. Yeah, that's fine. So. As long as you marry them after.
Yeah, but how old was she? Wasn't she young?
Or something? Like,
she
was like, really crazy.
It's crazy. No, I got it. Hold on.
Wife, 13. Oh, he was 39 and she was 17.
Oh, that's 20 years.
It was Jerry Lee Lewis that married his 13-year-old cousin.
Oh, yeah. That was fucking like the 50s, wasn't it?
No big deal.
Goodness gracious, great balls, pedophile.
But it's wild. It's an interesting case. We're definitely going to keep on it. And it's just, you know, it makes you think, like, you go back and I know people are going to be like, fucking, you know, fuck a Pizzagate and stuff like that. They're like, it's all fake. But then you keep seeing these gigantic sex rings that are trafficking young, vulnerable people. And you go like, was it completely wrong? Was it completely wrong? Or were they just, did they not have all the facts? And were they talking, was it talking about stuff like this? Like, these rings are happening.
Well, exactly. And then all of a sudden they add in all this crazy pizza and hot dogs and all this stuff to make everybody look like fucking wackos. But it's like makes sense. It's like try to make these discredit these people, make them look stupid. Like, we saw all that with COVID. Oh shit. Did I sink us?
No. Yeah, no, you just can't say the V word.
Oh, okay. Cause like, right? Like, I hear all these people being like the same people who are telling me that the thing that shall not be named was bad for you were the same people that were telling me JFK was going to get fucking resurrected. Yeah. Right? So you're like, this guy's a fucking nutcase. Right? So of course I'm going to trust the science. I'm not going to trust these fucking nut jobs. But like, it's like they purposely give these, you know, you get these kernels of truth and then they do whatever they can to to discredit and make you seem crazy.
Well, just tie it into other things that are so wild that people are like, well, that's associated with this. There's not a chance that I'll believe this. It's like, we're just getting hit with so much misinformation now and fake news that it's really hard to decipher. But it's like, part of me wonders if Pizzagate, that was put out there as a conspiracy that was easily debunked to be like, yeah, this is bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, like, the place didn't even have a
basement. Yeah, this is all bullshit. It's all bullshit. Like, but, you know, now when they go, hey, there's a pedophile ring in the music industry, people are like, yeah, like, just like Pizzagate. Yeah. Whatever, bullshit.
Yeah, I heard that before. Then you're
like, well, this is actually happening. Yeah. There's indictment, grand jury indictments. Like, it's fuck insane. It's happening. People are doing that.
Yeah, and then did he get suicided? And we don't hear anything about it. There's no more list. There's no more nothing. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, that
we still don't even know anything about the guy that fucking tried to kill the president.
Yeah, that's
know nothing.
I heard it on a podcast once with
it's crazy.
Ghislaine Maxwell. She's the only person in history to traffic sex traffic to no clients.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like, that's crazy. Because, like,
she was facilitating this to people. Who are the people that were paying? Right? Who are the people that were paying?
Totally.
It's fucking insane. how can she be in jail right now if there's not another charge of, you know, that, like, who is she trafficking to?
That's such, like, and like, yeah, I don't know. We haven't heard anything else. Have they said that they're going to be, didn't they release some type of list, or maybe that was fake?
I think Trump said he'd release the list, but you know, then you have one side saying he'd definitely be on the list. Who fucking knows? I have no idea. I don't know what to believe.
I don't know. I want him to exonerate fucking Snowden. Assange. Let's free the these people. Yeah. Let's release the lists. Let's do it. Give us truth.
It'll be an interesting time. Anyways, listen, if you're not on our Patreon, patreon.com/alientheoristpodcast, or go to alientheorist.com and hit that support tab. Help your boys out. Listen, it's getting revamped. So by the time you listen to this, there's probably going to be new tiers on Patreon available. Or if not, soon after you listen to this.
Overdue for an overhaul.
We're top down overhauling everything, working with Patreon to do some new reward systems and stuff. So look out for that. And it helps your boys. And we're going to do a new thing. We want to do some more Dungeons & Dragons. So I'm going to put this into the universe. We're going to start doing, we're going to release another Dungeons & Dragons episode. Every time we hit 20, 30 new supporters, 20 new Patreon supporters, every 20, we'll release a new episode. That sounds good. Good number. Every 20 Patreon supporters, maybe 30. The number's not hard yet because we'll see what Zell says. Zell will probably say 80. but we're going to do more Dungeons & Dragons for Patreon supporters. And we got some more stuff coming down the pipe now. We've been having some meetings. So we want to make, we're going to make Patreon okay again. So so join us over there. Help support the show if you like it. And you get hundreds of hours of bonus stuff. We have tons of confidentials, conspiracy stuff, crazy shit that we can't release to the public. And we're workshopping some new show ideas that you're going to hear on Patreon first if you like them, and we take feedback to kind of craft them before we release them to the public. But that's all we got this episode, and keep those eyes on the skies.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.